Welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 105. I am Cody Cooper. I'm filling in for Steve Cherubino today. Got a great show lined up, and as always, Steve McLaughlin, a.k.a. Door-to-Door Geek, is here. How's it going, Door?
Going very good. I'm going to say, I'm serious. Everybody out there, only the first couple minutes are going to contain the acronym or abbreviation of OLF. So I've got to get that out of the way. Really good. I'm starting to get antsy. I'm starting to get, twitchy for it.
I can feel the burn.
And I'll say Steve is not here because you know how he likes to do everything in person. Well, he decided to drive somewhere and buy tickets. I mean, he couldn't even buy them online. There's something against online purchases, apparently.
I have an idea where he bought them.
Walmart, if they had them.
There you go.
I'm absolutely sure of that. But yeah, cycle into the basic. Last year, I made a near catastrophic and emotionally catastrophic mistake. And that was, I left a backpack sitting at the base of my stairs when I went to OLF, and I literally forgot every piece of electronic equipment, plug, charger, tablet, netbook, laptop, external charger, I mean, everything except for my cell phone itself. So, don't forget the little things. Even when you're in your operating system, I'll say, don't forget the little things. And what I mean by that is, don't forget to run the updates once in a while. Don't forget to do your backups once in a while. Don't forget to, maybe once in a while, change your password from 1234 to something a little bit more complex. Don't forget the little thing. It's all like, I'm just saying that. Don't forget it. Because we all think about the big prizes, the big things we have to do, but we all forget about the small stuff.
Definitely. You get so focused on something, on the, looking at the bigger picture, you're not really figuring out what you, all the little things, all the small things.
Yeah, and I'll say, next week, I'm seriously considering not doing a show. I actually already emailed Steve and told him I wasn't. I'm thinking about skipping one show just because I'm leaving for OLF Wednesday morning, the morning after this show. And I really want time to focus on getting everything packed right, getting all my things together, all my ducks in the row, gas in the vehicle, everything. Nice, good, tight, solid, secure, whatever other adjective that could fit right there. So I'm going to probably skip next week's show. With that said, anything, my session at OLF, I seriously plan on having posted to the intertubes by October 2nd or 3rd at the worst case scenario. And I do plan on doing at least some light recording while we're there. And if we do actually sit down and talk with anybody, it might be released as a Linux for the Rest of Us.
Like an OLF compilation or something.
Yeah, like on the fly, off the cuff kind of thing.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things. We just got to see what happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe while we're at Oktoberfest, I might want to sit down and talk to anybody. I mean, it could be I want to talk with Kevin, my buddy from last year who was out there. I might want to sit down and talk to Tony Bemis about something that I think, you know, this needs to be recorded. And bam, that's going to turn out what it is.
I can say that being a listener last year around, it's nice to hear the stories of what to do sort of before, and it's nice to hear the stories when you guys get back, but to have recorded media from the event, I think it would be a huge plus. And it would entice more people to maybe go next year. So, right. Yeah, I'm actually going this year. Door is picking me up in Maryland, and we're driving in together. So, yeah, it's going to be quite the adventure. I cannot wait.
And I will say, I did ask, I think, two other people if they wanted to host the roundtable-type show. I don't feel like I should own it because there were other people from other podcasts on that. So we have to wait and see if they want to host anything. I want to give everybody else first dibs.
There you go. Well, if you do, if we do end up hosting anything like that, count me in for sure.
Absolutely.
People want to hear it.
Yeah. We're going to jump to the first topic, and I got to say, cool. Dang, cool. I mentioned this a little bit in the past and didn't really give it a lot of talking about, but there's a link over on raspberrypi.org, which is basically their blog site, talking about the happenings and the news events that are going on with the Raspberry Pi. Everything from this school just got 100 of them to there's a new development version of whatever distribution you can put on it. All kinds of little things. Well, September 12th, they posted a posting called Wednesday Grab Bag. And if you page down about one full time, at least on a good monitor, what you will see on your page is a professor at Southampton University, Simon Cox, and his six-year-old son, James Cox, kneeling down in front of a little like end table, and what's on the end table is a Raspberry Pi supercomputer with its framework made from Legos.
That is cool.
Unbelievably just awesome. One, to be honest, not trying to sound dumb, but to get his kid involved in this kind of thing can't be bad, okay? Getting a child involved with this kind of thing only means greater understanding and comprehension for this kind of thing later in life. Now, it is on a smaller scale than a full-fledged supercomputer, but the same DNA exists. And I mean DNA, not RNA duplicates, but the actual DNA, because a real supercomputer is running Linux, is running it as a cluster, and is using the same basic protocols to communicate. So when this says small supercomputer, it doesn't mean toy, pretend. No, no. This is a supercomputer. It's just smaller. And it looks like it's at least 8 times 4. No, no. 8 times 8, 64. It looks like it's 64 Raspberry Pis. That is just unbelievably cool. And I really will say, the pictures, if you actually go to southampton.ac.uk, they have actual pictures of the detailed framework and everything, how it was built. I just saw this and I just got giddy.
Yeah, it's, you know what, with devices like this, especially arguably the Raspberry Pi being one of the more popular ones in the past year anyway, to see them used so creatively. And I think this is the first time we've seen, at least I've seen, multiple of them put together for a greater purpose rather than just, okay, what kind of cases are people making? You know, this is a completely, you know, different take on it. And it's only going to legitimize these microcomputers in the future. And I mean, if you took the computing power of that supercomputer and then dollar wise compared it to anything else on that campus or nearby, I mean, it's a heck of a savings. It's very, very cool.
Yeah, that's one of the things I think a lot of. I'm going to put this in the nicest way possible. Not graybeards, but right now, active server technicians in the field, I honestly think to a certain degree poo-poo this idea because they think it's cheap, it's low, and it doesn't compare to my quad-core Xeon, blah, 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 blah. And don't get me wrong. There are certain things it's beneficial to have an Intel quad-core 4-processor $6,000 server doing stuff, but there are manufacturers taking the same concept and literally making, for instance, one OU, which is like that big server rack mounted system that has like 64 cores in it of ARM processors, where the inner workings of how they all work together is basically hidden from the admin, and it's all done in software to where the main interface to everything is much easier for them to overcome. I honestly believe server admins 3, 5, 8 years, whatever, they're going to have to overcome that stigmatism they have with, they have to have this, they have to have, you know, this HP $6,000 server. Price, really, what you're paying for there is a lot of the Intel, dare I say, trademarks and copyrights to get this stuff put together. ARM's completely different. And HP does have an ARM-based server made. I don't think it's for regular sale yet, but they actually do have one made. So these big companies are slowly joining in with this.
And along with what you're talking about, it's going to take more instances of these computers being used in this way to sort of get those people to think, well, maybe I should check this out.
Yeah, because they're going to think, this is the same processor that's in my iPhone.
Right.
This isn't enough for a domain controller.
Exactly.
You know. So, yeah, so they're going to have to get past that stigmatism. To be honest, if I was HP, I wouldn't build them as ARM processors. I'd call it something new. You know, the Hazera.
Rebrand it.
Something.
Rebrand it. Because if it's linked to something that people deem is maybe kind of cheap and unnecessary for their needs, then they're not going to get past it. But if you take the name away, repurpose it, definitely.
Yeah, I honestly believe that. Okay, we're going to jump to the next one, and we're actually returning to a site we were at last week, because after I found out I never heard about this website, I decided to do some digging, and that is worldofgnome.org. And I will tell people, this, what I'm telling you about here, is a honest-to-goodness cross-platform solution that everybody should at least have in their tool bag. Okay, I was listening to Geeksters, at geeksters.tv. I believe it was their last episode. They had Tittywell, you whatever his name is, in Texas, and they had Mitch and Kevin on, and they were talking about, to me, misusing SpinWrite, and they were talking about using C tools. Now, don't get me wrong, there are a buttload of tools out there to test hard drives. I don't say capabilities, but how reliable it is right now, air quotes. And this tool, G Smart Control, all one word. I actually heard about it. I don't want to say I might have heard about it first from Scott from myharddrivedied.com. And when he said it, I immediately just dove in face first and just banged on this thing for a couple weeks at my job, banged on my hard drives at work because, you know, I had multiple hardware failures in multiple years, I think related to power. All that's been fixed now. The building's much better. But I learned how to use this tool. And I will say, this tool is exactly as simple and easy as this. You boot it or you launch it in Windows, Mac, or Linux, doesn't matter. And you click one of three basic things: short test, extended self-test, and conveyance.
You got it.
Yeah, self-test. Thank you. And they're exactly what they sound like, except for conveyance, maybe. Short test is basically just a test that goes out and reads smart data. So literally, that test takes seconds to, you know, do. Because if you remember, I don't know if you listen to myharddrivedied.com, the smart data is actually stored on the hard drive in the very beginning of the platters, to where no data can be written to by a normal operating system. And that's where all of this data lies.
Right.
So all it does is spin up the disk real quick, read that beginning data, and come back. I like this because it actually also, at least on my GNOME-based system, color-coded everything. I'm sorry, I'm a fan of color coding. If there's less chance of me making a mistake, I'm all for it. And I will say the extended test took, I want to say for a 500 gig-ish drive, like 2 hours.
Okay. So
what it did was almost what SpinRite does. I know it doesn't do what SpinRite does, but it does do a read-write check on every sector of the drive is what I gathered. And then the conveyance took almost 24 hours. That there is a long pounder test. That's what I would run on a fresh hard drive you just bought at the store, and you want to make sure that this puppy actually works.
Right.
You know what I mean? Hook it up to that and just let it go. And if it survives that, you know you got yourself a decent drive.
Yeah, and I mean, even though hard drives have come back down as of recently, I think it was, someone on one of the shows said he was going through buying, it might have been Chris Berry, basically he was buying hard drives for customers brand new, and they were just dead. I mean, dead. It would not boot whatsoever. So, man, it doesn't really matter how much you're investing in these things. I mean, if you have a way to test it, I mean, just slap it in for a day or overnight or however long it takes, it's going to be worth it.
Right. I know Steve D also had that issue. I know... I believe Kevin Adair also had that issue. And I want to say there was somebody else. All these people having these issues tells me this can't be fluke. There is some reality in the overall quality of hard drives seem like they're falling. And Scott kind of hints at that too, but he doesn't want to bash the business. I understand. But I will say what I didn't realize is if you do go to the actual home page of this tool, G Smart Control, you'll see they also tell you Parted Magic and the Ultimate Boot CD, not the Ultimate Boot CD for Windows, but the Ultimate Boot CD also contains these tools. So you can boot it from a live environment. If you think your OS might be a little flaky and you're not sure why, because it could be the hard drive, you can always boot from a live disk for it.
That way you know it's not dependent upon your OS whatsoever.
Right, and that's always a good thing.
Yep.
And quick, because I forgot to email him and I forgot to voicemail him today. I think the tool Mitch was trying to think about on the last episode of Geeksters over at geeksters.tv was MHDD32. Hmm. MHDD32, yeah. My hard drive died. 32. That's how I remember it. Definitely a more complex tool to use. Super silly light to boot from. I mean, it's one of those things that literally on the 8-year-old computer can boot in like 2 seconds.
Wow, nice.
Yeah. Okay, jump to the next one. I will warn people. On this episode, at least, I'm bundling the Ubuntu stuff all in one spot. So if you hate you some Ubuntu, then you can skip forward. Or you can listen to Linux Zoo.
Mm-hmm. You can do that. Or you could just keep an open mind and realize that this news is going to be good for you either way.
Well, I always believe I want to know what others are doing, because no matter what they're going to eat, even if I don't use their distro.
You got it.
And I will say, Ubuntu is really, really, really trying to become a competent and brandable company. And Canonical, of course, is the company behind it. And this is an example to me of them doing something that, to be honest, is, I think, really smart for them as a business. And at the same token, will make certain neckbeards, not me, completely hate them and say they are evil. With that said, I do believe this is going to at least be moderately successful. And personally, I would like to see it very successful. And that is Ubuntu. One music store gets officially launched to the mobile market and the web market. I have not bought, I don't want to lie here. I've only bought two pieces of digital music in the last 10 years. I've only bought music twice in the last 10 years, so I haven't bought anything physical. Boom. The one thing I bought from Google Play, and it honestly was to see how the experience was and see how it went. Fairly satisfied in that experience. And the other thing I bought was, of course, Dual Core albums off of Dual Core's site, because Dual Core controls that, which is, to be honest, the smart way to do it.
I bought the same thing. Awesome, and supporting the artist directly is always the way to go if you have the option.
Exactly. Yep. And I will say, if you buy an album off of him, he told me this, for full price, every following album you buy, you should pay a lesser rate. So if you see him live and you just tell him, look, I bought one of your albums already, he'll cut you a break on extra disc.
And another thing with his, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure this was him, but he will let you download it in any format.
Oh, well, I don't know, but any...
Well, any format he has available. You're not limited to just MP3 or OGG or FLAC or WAVE.
If you want FLAC, you, sir, have yourself some FLAC, and you better have some hard drive space.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think it was over a gig for the album I looked at.
Wow.
Right. Now, I am going to tell you, I will buy some piece of music from this store as well, so I can experience, so I can see how it flows, how it works. I would love to say to somebody, my kid really loves iTunes. Well, you know, then I ask, who does your kid like? And I can feel confident in saying, you can get them at this store as well. You don't need iTunes. To be honest, the only thing that I was not able to gather from this is if any DRM is going to be involved in this. I really hope not, because now even Amazon and iTunes have stuff available in non-DRM format. They, I believe, both make you pay just a shade more. And to be honest, that to me is almost a little bit fair. I almost hate saying that because, you know, I don't want DRM, period. Period. And there is a limited offer, it says, to mark the launch of the online store, Canonical has some goodies. Anyone who buys music through the store from now until the end of October will get 6 months free of Ubuntu One music streaming, normally $3.99 a month. So they're offering you a streaming service for $3.99 a month. If you buy it now, you get it free, at least until for 6 months.
Yeah, I can. I've purchased a little bit more music than you have in the past decade. As a previous Apple guy, I purchased a lot of stuff through iTunes, but the past few years I've been mainly buying it from Amazon because they had the better catalog. And with Google Play, of course, now back and forth with Google and Amazon, we're going to see in a better competition, start to see more content come in, and then to have another player from the market. I think it's just going to benefit the consumer as long as it doesn't have DRM.
All right. Well, two things I've been able to find so far say no DRM whatsoever. MP3 256K. So that to me sounds like a fair quality. And if it's not DRM, you know, more power to them. That's good stuff. Of course, then I'll upload it to my Google Music so I can hear it on my Android, but, you know. That's just how I roll.
That's it.
Very cool. See, here's really, I hate saying it like this. One of the real reasons I really want them to be successful with this is Apple is truly and honestly only popular in the United States. They have some popularity in some other countries, but nothing like the penetration they get in the U.S. Canonical has the honest chance to be more popular in other countries around the world, and I think that it's a good time to try to seize that opportunity. So if they do it right, I believe, you know, you're going to have kids in Finland or whatever saying they're going to the Ubuntu One store to buy the latest Hans Gletzler or something.
And from a bigger perspective, too, if someone stumbles upon the store and they're using Windows or Mac and then start to like it, it could turn more people onto Linux. It's just another avenue to bring open source to people, even though I understand, you know, Ubuntu isn't completely floss, but still, it's potentially getting more people to give it a try. So I'm all for that.
Well, and I'll say the big plus about this one, you can play it on, I'm 99% sure, any operating system, Windows, Ubuntu, Android, iPad. Oh, no Mac client. Trying to hit them where they're low. So it's not completely cross-platform. It's cross-platform.
There you go.
Close. So that's good, too. Okay, the next one to me is an example of what I despise about Unity. The basic was don't forget the small stuff. Well, to me, this is a perfect example how the designers, implementers, coders, engineers, whatever, forgot something very simple in the Unity interface. In virtually every desktop operating system that I know of since Windows 98, I'm not sure, Windows 95 might have had it, you would have icons in your taskbar to show services that continuously run, and then when one of them got changed or an update happened, you would see a flash, or the icon would change at least to something else to show you there is something pending that you have not seen yet. Well, starting in Unity, a little notification icon at the top to let you know when you have email messages or pigeon messages or Twitter messages, if you connect it, stopped blinking or changing color. I believe it changes color, but it does not blink. There's a Ubuntu messaging menu icon blink thing written over at omgubuntu.co.uk. And of course, as always in Ubuntu, it's a PPA. So you have to install a PPA, do an update, do an install, and then the next time you have a notification pending, the actual icon will blink on and off. I like it because, to be honest, if I'm busy or if I'm really focused or I'm in the bathroom or I'm fixing myself to get a brand new can of caffeinated beverages, what happens if I get that notification during that period of time and then I come back to my desk? I will have no idea I have a pending notification unless I click it. At least with this, there's a flash.
Yep, and we've all been there where we got the notification and we notice it hours later. Or right. When it's way too late, you're like, oh, that person was on, or I could have done this. I mean, and right. And as anything, too, if it's really that annoying, I'm sure you can turn it off. Well, obviously, I mean, you don't have to turn it on in this case. So.
Right. And to be honest, I don't have Unity up and running today. I have it as an alternate desktop, and I don't know if it's configurable, but to me, I would change the color patterns because it looks like it's default in blue, a bright blue. But hopefully you can change that, but that's just me. Okay, the next one I think is almost as vital for some users. Notice the narrowing there. And once again, we are at omgubuntu.co.uk. I believe, but I really don't know. There's a tool in the Windows world called Snipper or Snipping Tool. And I think this parallels some of the function. I'm not even going to say close to all of it, because I do believe that tool does a bunch more. But in the default Ubuntu world, and a lot of the friendly Linux worlds, when you hit print screen on your keyboard, you either see a screen flash or you hear a click, and then in your pictures folder, there's a desktop snapshot. So it takes a screenshot. That's what I'm looking for. Well, some people want a little bit more flexibility, functionality to go with it. Upstep CleoPix. And all CleoPix is a little app with a little window that when you launch it, there's three buttons. Full screen, selection, and quit. So you can either click full screen and instantaneously get a full screen screenshot. The one I took did not include the tool itself, so it was able to see past itself, which I thought was a big plus. Or you can do a selection. And a lot of people sometimes insist on just doing a selection of a screen when they do a screenshot just to ensure that everybody's looking at the exact same thing. And they're not distracted by how many icons you have on your desktop or how many active programs you have up and running, or a browser window where all you can see is part of the title and it says NAK. And it turns out it's actually a recipe for some Peking duck or something. Yeah. I personally love having these tools around. I'll say that. Even though they're not for me, when I want to make something utterly apparent to somebody, if I have this tool, it cuts out my step of taking a screenshot, then loading an image manipulation tool like GIMP, cropping it, saving it, and then sending it. I can just crop it, quote-unquote, on the fly.
And probably a lot quicker, too, because it's just one simple tool for the simple task. Right. A unitasker, which was spoken about recently. So.
Yep, and this one looks like it's not installed via PPA, but instead from the Software Center, which to me is always a plus. It's just one less extra step that people have to take.
Very cool.
Yeah, that one's definitely in the side bag. Okay, last Ubuntu-related one, and let me tell you something right now. This is the one that I really like a lot. Because I'm a stickler. I always remember the fact that if I don't like Unity, doesn't mean I shouldn't use Ubuntu. Just means that after I install Ubuntu, I can take the advantage of the power in Linux and load a different desktop. So that's typically what I've been doing here lately. But they're going to enable, from the login screen, remote desktop access. Now, their verbiage to this, honestly, confuses the crap out of me. All you got to think of it as, i.e., you're on a Windows computer. You're in a business environment. You always have to control delete to log in because it's more secure. That's how virtually every Linux wants to work. You step up to the computer, you have to first log in. Well, you're going to have an option right there to say, I don't want to log into this computer. I want to remote into a different computer. So you don't even have to log into the computer, and you can log into another computer on the network. Talk about not loading bloat or cruft that you don't need. If your task is to remote into Johnny's computer and flip the screen upside down or something, maybe something more legitimate than that, but something.
Well, that can be used really well, not only in professional cases, but personal cases, because I've had to do tech support for my family. And once you set it up that one time, I mean, having such an easy interface for you to use, takes steps out of your process, takes steps out of their process, it's just making it easier. So, yeah, I'll be definitely interested to see how this works out.
Yeah, and I'll say the thing that blows me away that I almost can't believe is the three connection types it's going to support. One of them is not VNC. And VNC is the ghetto remote desktop. And what I mean by that is it's old and anyone can use it. And by default, it's not very secure. But the three it does support is Citrix, RDP, and VMware View. So I can remote into a Windows box from my Ubuntu login screen. That kind of blows me away.
You can log in and then download an ISO and then put it on the desktop.
Exactly. Or if you're really crafty, you can start up a Wubby install.
There you go. Like I did it for you, and yeah. Go. Right.
Really mess with them. And I will say on omgubuntu.co.uk, they do have a video. Looks like it is showing this feature off. So yeah, from the login screen, you even have the ability to set up a Wi-Fi connection if you're on a laptop to do your remote session. I just think that's cool.
Wow.
Okay, now we're going to get geeky. And what I mean by this is I firmly expect this link and a lot of the things we talk about in this next one to be completely useless to a lot of people. But I cannot encourage people enough. Bookmark this one. Email it to yourself, something, so you can look at it later. Okay. One of the things it seems like everybody who starts up with Linux sooner or later comes across a thing explaining SSH, and then they say to themselves, all I got to do is open up a port on my firewall and then I can connect from anywhere and I can do anything. I can do this, and I can print things, and I can access, and you can do a lot of stuff with it, and it's cool. But you also have to remember, every time you open up a port, you have a security vulnerability. We, as Linux users, I think, have a certain obligation. And it's because we have less to worry about when it comes to viruses and malware. I think we should acknowledge these things a little bit quicker. The yin and the yang. You have to give up something for something else, okay? I learned about this tool, to be honest, I think from Russ Winter, the Techie Geek over at TheTechieGeek.com, who will be at that three-letter abbreviation that we weren't going to say this late in the show.
The gathering at the place of the people.
Yeah, with neck beards and beer. Yeah. And it's called Fail to Ban. I'm 99% sure this is the one he talked about. And what this is a very crafty application. And what it does is, you put this on the computer where you want to remote access to. So you're sitting at your house, you have your server or your box, and you install SSH and you open up a port on your router to that computer. Well, that's the computer you need to install Fail to Ban. And what it does is, it's quite configurable actually, but by default, you can say, if I have X number of failed connections from X IP, ban them for X amount of time. Now, you can say something as simple as 3 failed login attempts from any IP, ban forever. Now, what you really got to understand, end users, what that means to a degree, to a very small degree, is you don't have to have as complex as security on your connection, because after 3 tries, they're not getting in. That doesn't mean to make your password the word password. Okay? That's not what I'm getting at. There are a lot of different things you can do to secure your SSH connection, including port knocking and doing all kinds of different things. I'm saying maybe those kind of extra things you don't have to worry about as much when you use Fail to Ban. That is strictly a very hippie thinking computer user on Linux, not a wide area system administrator. So you might want to consult with your closest wide area network system administrator. They'll call me an idiot. That's okay.
Very cool tool.
Yeah. Honestly, bookmark it. Send it to yourself with SSH security, something like that, so when you do need it, it's easier to find, because you will need this sooner or later. Even if you've been into Linux for 3 or 4 years and you think, I'm happy, I'm satisfied, be careful, because in 6 months you'll learn a trick you can do with SSH, and you'll be like, man, I want to do that.
Well, and it's kind of jump off of that point, too. We find these new tools and these new avenues to do tasks, where at the same time we may think, oh, this is so neat. Oh, there's a slight security vulnerability. Whatever. You know, we kind of have our head in the sand. Well, I'm just going to use it. It's always good to kind of take a step back and look at yourself and say, what am I leaving myself exposed to by doing it this way? Is there a way I can cover my tracks and sort of protect myself? And a tool like this is essential, not only for SSH, but also to just have that more overall awareness and to be more safe.
Right. And so you won't have the ability to have the excuse of, well, you saw illegal activity coming from my IP. I wasn't even there. I was out of the state. Which is, to be honest, you know, if any police or whatever falls for that, I don't care. That's just done. Because you can always do stuff remotely, because we have a thing called intertubes. I digress. Okay.
You got it.
I realized, Cody, I should have put this link much higher in our notes. And by much higher, pretty much the second link should have been.
I'm getting excited.
Yeah, well, okay. This is just another company. There is an HP one, but I liked this one. Okay. CodeThink launches little Linux ARM server with 8 quad-core CPUs per node.
Man.
Right. This seems to be a very common number. I honestly think I've seen now three of them. CodeThink is a Linux consulting company headquartered in the UK, and they've launched their ARM server called BaseRock Slab, where each individual node includes 8 quad-core ARM CPUs. 2 nodes can fit in a single IU slot, so that's like an inch to an inch and a half height-wise, for a total of 64 cores per rack unit. Okay, now, if you have a full rack, I want to say, is like 7 feet tall, maybe 6'6", or something like that. Well, with a full rack, you can, they say, safely fit 76 nodes in a full-size rack, totaling 2,432 cores. Jeez. Without, and this does not need special power or cooling infrastructure. That, to me, is one of the most vital parts right there. You don't have to have crazy, insane circuits built and all kinds of multi-thousand-dollar cooling built. It's just normal stuff there.
Right, right. That was something I meant to say earlier when we were talking about that that Raspberry Pi supercomputer. You don't see any fans because it's all open. Right. Because they're much smaller processors, they're not taking up, they're probably not using nearly the power and not generating nearly the heat.
Right. Devil's advocate, I got to throw this out there. The ARM processor language has a much smaller, a much more limited in instruction set. And it does a much better job at scaling power frequency needs on demand. Thus, less energy, less heat. That, to me, is one of the biggest reasons to go for this. And I will say, each slab uses a Marvel Armada XP ARM 7 V chip clocked at 1.33 gigahertz and have 2 gigabytes of RAM available to it. Sorry. This is the kind of thing that that literally makes me giddy. And the cost effectiveness thing, whatever, makes it, yeah, makes it even more desirable to, especially, because here's the one thing. Startup companies, and by startup companies, I mean a la, to be honest, if Facebook started 6 or 7 years after they actually did, or Twitter started 5 years after they did, or any of these companies started up later, there is near zero doubt in my mind they would have this kind of infrastructure in their back end, because it's so much less to buy up front and so much less to maintain. The overall total cost of ownership, TOC, is dimes versus dozens. Not that that made any sense either.
And you're right, because if you take a step back, and it's not necessarily, you know, I'm starting from scratch, what should I buy? But as a large company, and we've seen it before, they get into the habit of repurchasing, you know, new hardware from the same companies, or they get locked into software and they have to have hardware to support it, or vice versa, and it's just the same old thing over and over again. Whereas if you took a step back and really, really looked at dollar units versus productivity or right. power, right. if you really just looked at those versus, well, what am I used to? What have I bought before? What are my friends buying? What is my company suggesting? A lot more people would go with something like this rather than the traditional avenues.
Right. And the only other things I got to throw out there is, if you do go to baserock.com, you'll see some of the information about their slab. It does have the base, what actually comes out to be half depth 1OU, which server people know what that means. The carrier board has 30 gigabytes max, 120 gigabyte mSATA SSD, maximum 250 megabit per second read write. This is for, I believe, the OS part, where you don't really need a lot of rewrite speed, but that's decent rewrite speed. SATA port, dual 2.5 gigabit Ethernet trunkable Next, that is Sweet. Management firmware, management interface, does have a SSH access, of course, because it's servers. I would love to work at a company where they would have came to me 3 days ago and said, hey, give me a wish list of something you'd really like to have. Because this would be the list. And they would say, don't you want anything else? Nope. Just give me one of these, babies.
Let me play with this for now. I'll get back to you.
Exactly. Yeah, call me in a month.
Oh, yeah, and you're welcome for saving you 300 grand or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Right.
This next one, I'm literally throwing out there, it's still ultra new. I don't think it's fully baked, but I think it has so much potential. Okay. We have all kinds of services out there offering us the ability to have web meetings. I will say I don't know how many of them I truly trust with encrypted data, encrypted traffic. I know some of them really do good. They do a quality job. GoToMeeting. Mm-hmm. There's at least two or three other big names out there that are pretty popular. I don't know how competitive this is, but I have a lot of hope it's going to grow to be something competitive, and that is the official Apache Foundation releasing a Apache Open Meetings. This, to me, looks like a direct competitor to a GoToMeeting type of thing. Now, here's the huge plus about it. You install it on your server. You, the disadvantages, you have to supply all the bandwidth to it, but you own it. You own the data, you own the traffic, you own the session, you own the encryption, you own the security. That to me just rings of stuff that I like. Everything about there just really, really things that I like. And you can do integration of recordings into Moodle. So that's smart. Moodle is an open source education web framework platform.
Oh yeah, like a open source version like Blackboard or something.
Exactly.
There
exactly.
You go. Okay, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so super cool. It's only up to 1.4. Okay? So it's definitely new. With that said, man, I really hope this does. I only want this to grow, is what I'll say.
Yeah. Having an open source alternative to something like that, it's gonna just bring more people in. If someone's used to open a meeting, what's the name of it again? I'm sorry. GoToMeeting.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have to just wait and see. We have to wait and see how it grows. I am seriously. I have high hopes for a lot of stuff. I'll fully admit that. This is one of those things I feel like could have a lot of backing because it's a Apache, and Apache is like, at least in our country, gas engines. Everywhere you look, there's gas engines. Everywhere on the internet you look, there's Apache. Maybe not everywhere, but everywhere you look, it seems like they're there. That's it. Notice the verbiage, I was very carefully crafted. Okay, next one here. I saw this posting, and I thought it was good for people who feel like they're ready for that next challenge of learning. They've already have it installed. They can reinstall with no problems. They can install some base packages, and they want to know, show me an example of power. Show me an example of really what I can do to really do some serious crunching on this computer. And what I mean by crunching is digging and command line goodness, because the real reason for the command line is then in turn anything you can do is scriptable and repurposable. Yeah, that sounded good enough to me. Okay, over at everythingsysadmin.com, there's an article posted four Unix commands I abuse every day. Well, Unix commands, Linux commands, yin yang, they both work. I will say the best thing about this is it's not just a listing of four commands, but he actually talks about the commands, gives example of the commands, describes how he came to needing the command, and then showing the output from the command. So that, to me, made this really worthwhile. The number one command, he says, is basically the grep command. Now, grep is like saying, water. And what I mean by that is, everything you drink or eat either has water in it or was in contact with water at one point in time. Grep can be everything to everything. It's so unbelievably powerful. You can do so much with it. I guarantee you there's maybe two people on the planet that use it for all of its power, and that's like stretching it. He's using grep to basically search contents of files. That's cool. Okay, the second one was using the more command and the pipe, which I gotta say, his example is more star pipe cat. Cat files with header between each one. So, yeah, that just sounded bad. Mm-hmm. What he basically means is, in this search that I'm performing, show me the header of each of these files. So he's showing the combination thereof, the same principles and ideas of what he needs to get done in finding this information. And the third one is another grep command where he's basically enabling color, which I will say, like I said earlier, talking about smart control, I really like colored output. It just makes it much easier for me to just hone in on what I need to know. And the last one is a FMT command, which is a format command. So taking that output, he can then format it. So all of this is about data mining, is the best way I can put it, in his 9-to-5 job. So if you want to know really how to get in-depth and digging, this is, to me, really cool. And at the very bottom, he has an example of quite a long command using the cat, then using a TR, then using the format, then using a egrep, which is slightly different than a grep, and then he's using regular expressions for what data to search for. Super quick side. A perfect example of using regular expressions when you're trying to search something. Hypothetically, you want to find a phone number in a multi-gigabyte file, but you have no idea what any of the digits are. But you believe the format is going to be correct. And in this country, that format is number, 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 dash, number, 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 number. So three numbers, a dash, four numbers. With regular expressions, you can say the first character has to be a number between 1 and 0, or 0 and 9. The second, between 0 and 9. Third, between 0 and 9. Fourth has to be a dash, or a minus, or whatever that symbol is.
However it's formatted, yeah.
Right, so you can specifically hone in and have basically, I call, like, conditional wildcards. It is super ridiculously powerful. With that said, not very human readable, the way the search looks. And you really do need tools to help you get over the first couple months of regular expressions. So I'll see if I can find a good tool for that.
And I got to say, look, usually when I see explanations of commands, they're not this detailed. I mean, I had to scroll down for one of them, I think, two or three times.
Yeah.
And I'm not using a good monitor right now, so it's probably a standard scroll. But yeah, if you're looking for, if you're a sysadmin and you're looking to gain any sort of knowledge on these commands, everythingsysadmin.com, I think, would be a great resource, because he goes into quite a bit of detail on each of these four, and there's got to be a lot more content on this site. So good point out.
Absolutely. And I'll give you another, I'll throw another quick example of utterly filling the need of definition and examples like that site did, because that's the thing that really drew me to it, was how they went into such detail of explaining the scenario, the how, what, and why, and then the steps to figuring it out and getting it done. There's another website out there called LinuxInTheShell.org. Dan Washko, who right now has podcasted a little bit intermittently, he just physically moved, and I believe he has training he has to go to, so there's going to be a little delay. But let me tell you something. LinuxInTheShell.org, this guy takes a very simple command like top, T-O-P. Top command in Linux is a command you can just go to any command line because it comes installed on everything. Type T-O-P, hit enter, and you'll see what appears a kind of understandable output of memory usage, processor usage, and activity on those two things on your screen. I will say these are podcast, video cast, and blog entries all for the same topic. For top, for instance, that's a simple command. He broke it into three episodes, okay? Each episode, I swear, the text alone has to be over 2,000 words. He's going into some pretty deep detail while doing it, not losing people. And this is what I really have to acknowledge him on. The way he's presenting the material to me is very digestible, and that's a hard road to cross, and that didn't make any sense either. It's a hard thing to get your crosshairs on, both being complete and being comprehensible at the same time.
Me being knowledgeable on, well, we've talked about this before too, about how like certain people just can't communicate the great ideas that they have, and yeah, having that knowledge and making it digestible for the layman is a gift on one end, but it can also be learned if you really, really work at it. So, right. Yeah, having it easily digestible for other people is definitely a plus.
Right. Yeah, so I really do encourage people, go check it out. If you like what you see, let him know. Just shoot him an email. There is a contact at the top, and there is a about there. So it's very easy to know, let him know what you think and how it's going on. I've contacted him. I told him basically, keep it up. No matter what you do, keep it up. If you need something, let the community know, because this is really worth a lot to the end users.
And it takes that kind of encouragement to have him keep going, because if he's putting a lot of work into it and he's not getting any sort of recognition or responses whatsoever, then you're just going to get discouraged and quit.
Exactly, and to me, that's the worst thing that could happen to this. I'm going to mark a couple of these so we can read them for next week.
Okay.
I think we are going a little bit long.
I want to mention something real quick, if you don't mind.
Oh, of course.
I'm surprised you didn't bring this up, because I always hear you say it. The Humble Indie Bundle 6 was announced today.
I honestly saw it, but I didn't have time to really look at it.
Oh man, well I'm a gamer, as some of you know, but yeah, I buy all the Humble Bundles, because not only is it, I mean, it's just no one loses if you buy the Humble Bundle and make the minimum donation. Even if you make the minimum, or not even make the minimum, but if you just beat the average, you get extra games.
Right.
But yeah, Humble Indie Bundle 6 was announced today. 6 mind-blowing games. The 6 games are Richard, Shatter, Spaz, Torchlight, and Vessel, and then Dust Force you get in addition if you beat the average. And I checked out some videos of some of these games earlier, and Richard looks like a crazy platformer with all sorts of nuts weapons. Spaz looks fun. I've seen Torchlight played. So, and right now, the average is only 567.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, I know. And and you also get the soundtracks included with the games. Wow, nice. That's just, yeah. So, man, And I've heard other guys on the shows talk about this before. Just, I mean, even if you don't have the time to play the games now, get the $6. Everybody's got $6. Just buy these, support the developers, or give all the money to the EFF, give all the money to Child's Play, split it up, but to the penny, however you want. But it's a great deal. And speaking about music earlier, with Ubuntu One's music store, Humble Indie Bundle is also now doing music, which we brought up on past shows, where they're doing the same thing but with albums, and that's how I got introduced to MC Frontalot's new album, which is really good. So, and not to bring up anything from LOLF again, but he will be there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, supporting Humble Indie Bundle and anything that they sell, it's just an amazing thing. So go to humblebundle.com. Check it out if you haven't already. If you bought a bundle before, chances are you're going to buy every single one coming up because it just feels good, and you end up getting a lot out of it, a lot of value. So check it out.
Hey, well, two quickies. I'm watching the video on Rashad. It's a 2+ minute video. Dude,
isn't this that nuts? Looks,
besides ultra crisp and good looking, really cool. I mean, I'm trying to think. This is, it almost reminds me of that gun in... oh man, it's a super popular game that was sold alongside Portal.
Oh, it was sold alongside Half-Life or Half-Life. Team Fortress.
Yeah, because you have the gravity gun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's what I'm saying here. I will say the only, and this is not going to come out right. The only bad thing is I think two or three of these are initially not available in Linux. They said quite literally, about 24 hours to 48 hours after launch, they will be ready. Hmm. And they're going to be version basically 0.1s. So I encourage people, get this on Linux to support them, but also provide feedback if you have bugs to help them make it a better product.
Mm-hmm.
These look really, I don't want to say the word tight because it makes me sound, you know.
Like you're trying to be too hip. Yeah.
I'll say that. But, man, these maybe are the best-looking games I've seen yet on the Humble Bundle.
They are cool. And to be honest, I mean, for the amount of gameplay you're getting and how awesome these games look, I mean, some people, and I've talked about it in the past, have suggested this, say, well, what kind of games are they if they're that cheap? They're good games. And you won't know what kind of games they are until, I mean, at least go watch the video. The video should totally make you want to do it. But honestly, I would pay $5 or $6 for each game. I mean, maybe not as a full bundle, but I mean, if you think, I mean, I would at least buy one of these games for that amount. So even if there are a couple on there you don't know about, you're not sure about, if there's that one that you're like, yeah, I really want to play that, chances are the cost is going to be cheaper than if you bought that game by itself anywhere else. And you're getting all that extra content, too. So why not do it?
Yeah, I'll say, wow. They have, to me, the average game on Humble Bundle has really upped their game in the last two versions on graphics.
Mm-hmm.
So we're, I mean, these might not be quote unquote 1080p Retina display, high, whatever. They are ultra respectable for, in my eyes, computer games. And I just insulted a whole bunch of people by saying,
nah. But yeah, it's getting to where now, like, even the past few, there's always that one game that I've at least heard of. I'm like, wow, okay, oh, I'm going to get that at least. Now, what are these other ones?
Gotcha.
Definitely give it a try. Because, yeah, there are other services that offer these packages. Like, they have a package of the day. And all these games you've never heard of. And you look at them, you're like, I don't know if I'd do that. Humble Bundle's a great deal. Check it out.
Man. I got to stop watching these videos, man.
I know. We could do this forever.
I know. Very cool stuff.
So you want to head into some emails?
Oh, yeah.
Cool. All right. Let me bring these up here. Steve happened to send them off onto me.
Very cool.
All right. Just got an email from Denning. He says, hello, Steve C. and Steve M. Some build a Raspberry Pi supercomputer running Linux, and they published the steps on how to do it. Here's the link to the story. And we'll have the link in the notes. But let me click on this here because I haven't looked at this yet. It's actually the story that you brought up earlier. It's the same one. Different picture of the supercomputer, though, built out of Legos.
Gotcha.
So, So yeah, that's very cool. Thank you, Denning. They may even have put that on the show because of you. So it came on there. Yeah, I would. I mean, any user. If you guys, I mean, we don't cover everything. You know, I'm obviously not bringing that much to the show other than the Humble Bundle and listening to Door. But if you guys, if it's okay with you, Door, obviously. I mean, if you see anything, hear about anything cool that was never been covered on a show, send it in. Worst case scenario, we still don't cover it. But
right.
So, very cool. All right. Next, an email from Frank. Yeah, let me see here. It says, "Hello, guys. I'm sure you have heard or read that Ikey Doherty is getting rid of Debian Stable as a base for Solus OS 2 and going with Pardis instead. What do you think of this move, and do you think there's a possibility you can get an interview with Ikey about his future plans for Solus OS 2? Love the show. Best regards, Frank from Denmark."
Easy answer. No, I'm not getting an interview with him. Period. Ikey doesn't... He's not a public speaking guy. He doesn't like... to publicly speak, but I will say he's ultra open and available. Listen to my verbiage here very carefully. I posted this on Google Plus privately to him and asked him, you know, I basically said, like, I'm not asking you to answer this because I can't demand you to do anything, but is it possible that you could give me something to say about this? Okay, I will say the people in the Solus OS forums also, I think, are completely freaking out because the activity in the forums has went down, and it's now manageable. I can actually hang there and chat, because before it was just so active I just couldn't keep up. It was insane. But okay, here's the thing. First and foremost, Ikey is not moving to anything. Okay, and I'll first say this. I saw at least one person on Google Plus say, paraphrasing here, "Ikey, you're an idiot. You have no idea what you're doing. You're going to screw everything up. It was working just fine. Why are you changing? Debian's what made it good," something to that effect. And Ikey just simply responded to me in a very upstanding way. "If you think Debian is what made Solus OS great, then go install Debian." And I stopped and thought about that. Okay, he got my attention. Debian is not what made Solus OS usable, functional, functional, comfortable, and solid. I'll say Debian gave him the opportunity for that. It was Ikey that made Solus OS functional, usable, clean, stable, because he's the packaging guy. He had to basically repackage everything for Solus OS, so it's his responsibility how stable each package is. Okay, with that said, he basically responded to this. I'm going to paraphrase because I'm a horrible reader. "We are not taking Pardis on. We are only taking their package management system, PISI. So like in Ubuntu and Debian and Linux Mint, you have apt-get. Well, now in Solus OS, you're going to have PISI instead. So it's just a different tool. So it's still Linux, still using packages. It's just a different tool you're going to use to install and uninstall." He also said, "Chances are I am going to work with Anka, a Pardis fork, to provide a common repository for both projects." Oh, and he also said the installer might be stolen. Now, what he means by that is him and Pardis are going to have a common repository of packages, i.e. a lot less work for Ikey. Repackaging all these things and spinning up everything, it takes a lot of man hours, a lot of computing power, and a lot of time. He's looking to help minimize that time. That's what I gathered. That's not what Ikey's saying. He also said he is also working actively with the guys doing development work and have successfully managed to bootstrap the minimal systems, create build frames, running it in Cheroot for server distributions, da, da, da. So what he's basically said is he already has the backbone, the central nervous system, completely done for this, which to me is a really important step. He also says Solus OS will use its own base, but will have the same package manager, i.e., he's not basing it off Pardis, he's basing it off himself. He's taking responsibility for all of the packages, and he looks to share some of that responsibility with Anka, a Pardis fork. That, to me, is not bad news, okay? Because I am under the God's honest opinion, the reason I liked Solus OS was because Ikey was involved with it. Linux Mint Debian edition was basically, in so many words, at least partially, his child. And when that first came out, a lot of people liked it a lot. He's not there anymore. A lot of people now don't like it. We started up Solus OS, based it off of Debian. To be honest, a lot of people like it. And I think they need to realize what they like about it is not the Debian backend. It's not the .deb packages that they like. It's not the apt-get that they like. It's the care, the blood, the sweat and the tears that Ikey has poured into it. I'm a firm believer, if I needed a real kernel hacker developer, I would try to get him hired, because obviously he's damn good at something on a computer. I might not be able to fully understand it, because like I said to him, I'm no distro developer, so I'm not going to second guess you with these decisions. I'm along for the ride. Come sink or swim, I'm along for the ride. And everything I've seen out of him has been really good, so I'm there, I'm with him, I'm supporting him, I'm behind him, and we're going to see what comes out of his brain.
And what a great response to that, too, because it can be taken a number of ways. Either the person who sent that in has actually used Debian before and really believes it, so yeah, go use Debian if you really like it, or they've never used Debian, they're not really sure what it means, and they're going to go try Debian, and they'll be like, yeah, you know what, Solus OS is pretty nice, maybe we'll try that again. So, yeah. Awesome. Gotcha. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it too. And yeah, you can't second guess the decisions, because ultimately it's based on so many other factors that aren't made aware to us, right. But it's made aware to him, and anything that streamlines his process and causes his workflow to decrease and his output to increase. Right. You just can't argue with that.
Right. And I mean, the best way I can put this to the total noob, it's almost like, and this is really, it's a stretch just to get the point across. It's almost like me and my wife watching football and her doing armchair quarterbacking.
Exactly.
I want to say to her, what the, no, hon. First off, what you said you wanted them to do is actually illegal, okay? Number one. Number two, they're doing what they did for a reason. I can't explain it to her. Just like Ikey probably can't explain to me the idiosyncrasies that he has to do to get everything working. I'm just a happy onlooker for this. I don't want to know how to make distros. I don't want to. I want to be a happy Linux user, period.
And if you are upset about it, consider it one brick in a yellow brick road. It's just one more step forward. It's one more building block. Mm-hmm. Who knows? This working correctly in Solus OS might lead into many, many other great things. And this is him dipping the toe in it. This is him starting a slightly new direction. But overall, you got to trust him. And if it's not for the best, and if it does end up garbage, well, guess what? It's not the only Linux distro. Go somewhere else.
Yeah. Go use Linux Mint. Go use whatever. go. Just go.
I hope you like the color green if you're going to mint.
Oh, yeah. True. And the kicker is, I believe Ikey is Irish. So you would think Solus would have been green, too. Well, stereotypically green, I'll say.
If you leave one green product, one project, go to another one, it could look a little weird.
Yeah.
All right, let's see here. Next email. Sean, I'm going to butcher this. Sean Venadom, maybe, sent Steve something via Google+. It says, I thought you two would be interested in this. It is a cross-platform video editor, AvidEmix.
Mm-hmm.
AvidEmix, there you go. Reaches version 2.6, installed in an Ubuntu 12.04 web update. It's a link to a web update article. Of course, if you go to, let's see here, it's loading right now. That's webup8.org, web update, or webupd and then number 8. Yeah, I got to say, yeah, and then any great video editor that comes on the market, it's going to just lend a little more legitimacy to the platform. So this does look cool.
Well, yeah, I'll say I don't understand the differences between linear and non-linear video editing.
I will tell you.
Okay.
Linear video editing is where you have to actually edit it in a linear fashion, to where you would have to basically start at the beginning. Well, if I explain non-linear video editing, it'll be easier for you. Non-linear video editing is the ability to think of a minute-long clip, okay, broken up into 5 12-second chunks, okay? Now, you're going to be able to basically take pieces from from a much longer clip and arrange them in a fashion non-linearly, because you can skip to the end and watch it and then skip to the beginning and then go to the middle versus I have to build this 15 seconds and then attach this 15 seconds to the end of it and then attach this 15 seconds to the end of it. Linear editing is literally what you would have to do if you were physically editing film. You would have to attach, you know, the first bit to the second bit to the next one in a linear fashion from A to B. Where non-linear is you can start at F and then skip to Q and then go back to D. It's the standard nowadays for video editing. To have a linear editing software is kind of ridiculous nowadays, because it almost takes away the entire notion of doing it in digital form rather than doing it in physical form. So that's the difference.
Right. Well, I want to say I've heard people pronounce this AvidMux.
That's probably it, yeah. I probably butchered it, just like his name.
AvidMux. Yep. Okay. Well, I'll say I have used this, and when I use it, I seriously didn't know it was a video editor. If that makes any sense to anybody.
Just the interface was weird, or what?
Well, it wasn't the interface I expect. When I expect to see video editing, I expect to see at the bottom a huge area dedicated to show like timelines of audio and or video. I didn't see this. What I did with this application was, before I knew what I was doing, I would download FLV videos from the internet that were actually songs, but they were music videos, and I would use this tool to basically rip the audio out of it. And I would do a audio extract or audio save as kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I seriously did not know it was a video editor, so I didn't use it as such. I will say since then I've learned, and I've watched a couple videos explaining, ironically enough, how to use it as a video editor. And I will say it does look doable for a lot of basic needs. And when I say a lot of basic needs, I don't want to say it's basic. What I want to say is, it completely fills people's needs who just want to like post videos to YouTube. You know what I mean?
It's a general use video editor.
Yes, exactly.
And I will say having a sort of a non-traditional interface such as this can be much easier for people who have never edited video before, because you're not having to essentially learn every single bell and whistle. Right. It's more condensed, it's more streamlined, and which is really needed for this type of user that we're speaking about. If you look at the traditional non-video editors, which Dora was talking about, you usually have the timeline at the bottom and then a sample clip area and then where you can watch the clips. But there's a bunch of tools in between. So traditionally, I don't like to see the simpler ones where it's just like it's completely foreign to me because I'm so ingrained in using the others. But it's probably not directed at me. So if it's going to bring video editing to anyone who hasn't experienced it before and get them interested in it, then it's just for the better. So I'm all for it. However, if you yourself are interested in something more advanced, and you guys have spoken about this on the show before too, Adora Lightworks, mm-hmm. the professional nonlinear video editor, actually got a release date next month for October in Linux.
Yeah, but you know, I say that's like checks in the mail.
Yeah, well, hey, that's only next month. Who knows?
I know. Well, and what I really mean to say is we have been promised other things in the past.
Of course.
And it literally either didn't happen or just got delayed. I don't believe I've ever heard a project of this magnitude to come out and say a date and not deliver, maybe a little bit late, but still deliver. If that thing actually comes out and it's actually usable, to me, that's like almost, cliche time. It's a game changer. It really is.
Oh, it is. Well, here's a game-changing price, too. For the general home user, free.
Right.
Right. Absolutely
and,
free.
And to me, what that kicker of that really is, that is such a beautifully single-edged sword, okay? It's not a double-edged sword. It's a single-edged sword. And what I mean by that is, so I can sit here at home, do whatever I want with it, and it's completely free. And I can take those talents to a business and get a good-paying job to where it would be their responsibility to pay for a corporate license. Yep. I think that benefits the people behind this project immensely. I'll say it's not complete. That means, I'm guessing, it's not completely GPL'd unless the businesses are just playing support contracts.
And you bring up a very good point, too, because if you look at Photoshop, for example, you know, like 10 years ago, if you're just some guy starting out in digital photography, you're not going to go spend like $2,000 or $3,000. You're going to pirate it,
yeah.
Which ultimately is damaging Adobe. But you got to do what you got to do to learn the industry standard tool. Luckily, there are more industry standard tools when it comes to video editing instead of just like the one avenue. I mean, a lot of people say, well, you got to use Final Cut. Well, you can also use Avid, and you can also use this now because it's a great tool. But being able to have a free, non-watered down version of it to use to learn, and then, yeah, go into a bigger environment and say, hey, I know how to use this, and it's the exact same interface. Where they don't have to pay that much to train you. You can put it on a resume. That is a win-win right there. Totally.
Yeah, and I'll say what is going to be released is an alpha, which, to be honest, I'd much rather them admit we're releasing an alpha versus just saying we're releasing something. You know, it's good to be upfront about these kind of things.
So if you're looking for more of like an introductory video editor, definitely give Avidmux a try. If you're looking for something a little more high-end, cross your fingers and hope that Lightworks comes out on time. Either way, thank you, Sean, for bringing that to the show and suggesting it. I'm sure we'll definitely keep up on both projects. I can't wait to hear more from both.
Yeah.
And we got one final email here. Let me see here. From... Who is it from? I don't know who this is from. Anyway, it's someone writing in about the podcasting from OLF. He says, my wish to hear at OLF is to hear beer slurred pronunciation. I can say that, I can guarantee I'll make it happen.
Yeah.
But only because you requested it.
Well, yes, if they wouldn't have requested it. I mean, what's
it
the
wouldn't
point
have happened. Quite frankly, I was going to keep the non-slurred pronunciation in gear all the time, but I'll do what's asked of me. Even though it wasn't even directed at me, I'll do it.
Right. Well, we have to give the people what they want.
And I'll make sure the door does it.
Good
deal. I will. because OLF is going to be a great time. Anything else you got for us, Dor?
Honestly not. I will say, now I'm almost terrified of the show after OLF. Because every time I don't do a show, I have way too much content for the next week. Well, I'm going to have all that plus everything that happened at OLF.
There you go. Well, you know what? Well, here's my thought. Now, I'm excited. I would be just as excited, if not more. Well, not more, but I would be excited to hear about OLF if I wasn't going. But I hate to think that there's people out there that don't want to hear about it because they're jealous or they're just sick of hearing about it.
Well, there was one in the chat room that just said, no OLF speak, please.
Okay, well.
And that's because he's jealous because he made a calculation error.
Oh, no. Well, I'm sure there's a good story behind that.
Yeah.
But I think that here's my suggestion. We release like a special episode because we could throw that in the feed because it's because Steve owns this because Steve can do it. And if you guys don't like it, you can go try Debian. But you could release a special episode for just OLF speak and release it at the same time as the rest of us. That way, if you don't want to listen to it, it's fine, whatever. Or just, yeah. But yeah, there will be some OLF talk. If I'm back on the show again sometime soon, I don't care if it's December. I'm like, hey guys, remember OLF? We got to do it a little bit. We got to. Because why not share? If you don't want to listen to it, just hit pause or fast forward or something. But yeah, we got to do OLF. Cannot wait. And if you're sticking to what you said earlier, this may be the last show until you get back, right?
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So if that's all you have, that's all I have to bring. Thank you, Steve, for asking me at the last minute if I would come and help with the show. I hope I did well. I had a lot of fun. Dor, you're great as always, bringing all the content. And thank you guys for listening. As always, check out podnuts.com and check out everything. Appreciate it. Have a good one, guys. See you soon.